Want more stories in your life without adding to your TBR? That's where Audible comes in. I use it for the original novellas, the Plus catalog like Deanna Reborn's Veronica Speedwell series, and those audiobook sales that you can beat. Right now, Audible has a special offer for new and returning members. Click the link in the show notes to see what deal you'll get and start listening today. The What to Read Next podcast helps you build a TBR of future favorite books. In each episode, Lori Amin interviews authors and book influencers to recommend books they loved for you to pick up today. If you're an avid reader, always looking for your next great read, then the show's for you. Hi, Christy. Welcome to What to Read Next podcast.
Hi. Thank you so much for having me. I'm really excited to be here and talking romance with you.
I am very excited to have you here. So tell us a little bit about yourself.
Okay, so I am, I always say that when people ask, I'm one of the words I use to describe myself is prolific. I've been writing really since grad school. I went to the University of Connecticut and I was a history ed major. And that's when I always knew that I wanted to write romance novels, but my path to publication wasn't necessarily the path that you necessarily think you're going to take. You know, I'd wanted to have the agent and, you know, the traditional contract. And my path was definitely slower. And I ended up, my path kind of, it fell into it a little bit. I was on bed rest for 17 weeks with a really complicated twin pregnancy.
Oh my gosh.
And, you know, and I'd started writing seriously when my son was born. And when he was born, I learned he had a disability. And so writing, like, books are an escape for all of us. You know, I was in a position financially where I couldn't afford books. So I used my libraries and I wrote my own books and it was very therapeutic, but I never did anything with them. I was still kind of just trying to pursue that traditional path and until I was on bed rest. And so at that point I was really bored and I had had watched an episode of Say Yes to the Dress. I don't know if you've ever seen that show, but Valerie Bowman, who's a Regency romance author, was on, and she was picking out her wedding dress. And if you haven't seen that episode, it's a great one.
I need to look for that episode.
I love Valerie. So I was watching it and, you know, and she's like, I'm a romance author. And I'm like, and it jogged it. And I had just binged a lot of TV because there's, you know, only so much you could do. Mm-hmm. And then I'm like, hey, I have all these books on my computer. And so I'm like, yeah, I'll just publish them and, you know, indie publish and see, and, you know, maybe I'll find a reader. And, you know, and I ended up, my first book in my series had ended up hitting the USA Today bestseller list. And then I never stopped writing. And so I'm, you know, more than 70 books in. And so, you know, about a few years after that, Montlake Romance, which is an arm of Amazon Publishing, reached out and asked if I'd like to do a series with them. And then I did that. And so only recently I have just had my first experience in the more traditional, you know, New York sphere with my All the Duke Sin series, which is mass market published and really exciting because, you know, you always dream to hold your book in your hand. And it was nice to be able to go into a store and see it on the shelf and have my daughters there with me to see it too. And, you know, and kind of like come full circle.
Yeah. And you're in the Brooklyn family. So, you know, so I love that. Oh my gosh. I love this idea. Like, honestly, like just seeing that show and like that trigger to say like, hey, let me give this a try, you know, because maybe this route did not work right now. It can work eventually. You just know it now. It's like, it's just take one action. Just follow the crumbs. That's why I like to say it. Like, follow the breadcrumbs. Yeah. Like, it'll lead you to where you need to go next, you know?
Yes, I love that. That's great.
So let's chat about, like, you're a prolific writer. So how do you manage it all? Like, how do you write? Like, do you write all the time? Like, what's your schedule looks like?
So, you know, if you had asked me pre-pandemic what my schedule had looked like, you know, life had been more standard normal of what we thought like life looked like. And so my girls had been in preschool and, you know, in school, and my son was in school. So I would work all day when I dropped them off. I would work like the traditional school day. And And then I'd work at night too. And when they went to bed, and it was, you know, I was writing like 10 or 12 hour days. And I love to write. So it's not like, you know, it's not, for me, it's not sitting down, it's a chore. Like, I enjoy what I do. And it's, you know, I always say that, you know, if you're an author, like, I think of myself more as a storyteller kind of than, you know, an author. Like, there's always just, it's, you know, there's stories everywhere kind of for me. And so, but when the pandemic hit, you know, my kids are home, mm-hmm. and, you know, we're in a position of teaching three children at home. And like I mentioned, two of my children have, special needs, and one is severely disabled. So there was no, you know, there's no respite, mm-hmm. and there's no, you know, so I had to kind of go through this evolution and a shift. So there were several authors. One of my, we call it accountability partner, is her name is Laquette, and she's a contemporary romance author, and very similar, you know, a mom as well. And we started writing, started at night, and then, you know, it, your day is just so full. So we created a new schedule where we would set our alarms and write at 4:30 in the morning or 4 in the morning. Mm-hmm. So every day I wake up, you know, at 4, and I will write until about 7:30, mm-hmm. while my kids are sleeping. And mm-hmm. in that time, I've learned that I'm more productive just with those few short hours, as opposed to the 10 to 12, mm-hmm. because the house is so quiet, because mm-hmm. nothing has happened in the news cycle. I mean, well, you know, everything's always happening, but it's not like, you know, there's kind of this process before the world catches fire every time, you know, the time that it usually does during the normal 9 to 5, 9 to 9 kind of shift. So, you know, it's just quiet. There's no noise. There's just nothing. There's just this great silence. And it's been really, it really feeds the muse, just your thoughts. And, you know, it's not like emails to respond to at that time necessarily, because, you know, most people aren't sending emails at 4 in the morning. And so, yeah, so that's really my writing schedule now. And I do it daily. I really committed to, like, I adjusted my life a lot with, you know, put a lot of, you know, life in perspective. And, you know, and my weekends I give to my, you know, my family. And, you know, unless I'm on deadline and, you know, I have edits that I have to turn in, you know, I try not to really work on the weekend, unless, you know, my kids have something that, like, they have to do for school, and then I'll sit and we'll kind of work together like that, if it's something that I could do for, but no, I could pretty much just, that's my week. And it's rigorous. Like, that's my schedule. That's my routine, and it works, and I don't waver. And I write a lot of words, like 4,000 words a day.
Oh my gosh. That's amazing. That's amazing.
That's what peace and quiet can do.
Yeah. With peace and quiet, and just like not having any distractions, like just removing the distraction and just be like, just writing, you know, like get it out.
Completely. And oh, and then the other, I think it's the Pomodoro method, was, you know, and I'd never heard of it really until I'd started, you know, working with my critique partners, or the writing accountability partners. But it's, you know, you're on for 25 minutes, you're off for 5 minutes. Mm-hmm. So that is all, that's also been so helpful, because I can still go on social media, but I know at five, when that 5 minutes are up, we're like, okay, back to it. And, mm-hmm. you know, and reporting, how many words did you do? And it's not a competition. It's just, again, it's putting out that it's there, that I, you know, accountability, you know, and so.
So I got a question, because I've interviewed a lot of indie authors who were in the regular contemporary dark, you know, very niche market, but historical romance is like, it's not as wide in indies, you know. So what was the experience being an indie with historical romance, like promoting, marketing, you know, because you get to do the whole work, you know.
It's a lot. So it's, you know, I didn't really appreciate just how much work the indie publishing was until I was with a publisher who, you know, coordinates all the pieces and the details of, you know, the cover and, you know, the book blurb. Like, I'd rather write a 100,000 word book than write a 250 page blurb for the back of my book. Like, There's an email sitting there. My editor's like, I just need the quick blurb. And I'm like, I'd rather just send you the whole book that's almost done right now. But, you know, so for indie publishing, it's everything. And at first it's all I knew. Mm-hmm. So it's, you know, kind of, and so the that work day is a lot, because, you know, you're responsible for your blog tours and you're responsible for your marketing. You know, but there's also something freeing in that too, because you have control of it too. So it's, you know, it's these trade-offs, you know, and for me, I enjoy both. So that's why hybrid really works for me, but I, you know, it's work.
Yeah, it's work. It's a lot of, like, you know, it's just like a day to day, like you're gonna manage all the different logistics, yeah. Manage all the different, you know, all the right. different parts and pieces, you know.
Right, because it's not just edits, right? So it's, you okay. know, it's developmental edits, and then it's, you know, it's a second round of dev edits, and then it's the proofread, and then it's the copy, right? So there's just so many stages of editing with just, you know, within that. And it's not like you use the same person for each editorial stage, right? You have different proofreaders. And so coordinating all those schedules and, you know, making sure that you are on the books, and then, you know, and you know, I'm trying to find wood to knock on, but like missing deadlines is not something that I do. And, you know, it's something that I've really prided myself on, and, you know, making sure that my books are turned in. And, you know, sometimes you can't help life, you know, and, you know, I've had really times that it's been challenging. And, but, you know, with indie publishing, you are working with contracted people who are relying on your income as well. So it's, you know, being respectful of these editors whom you're working with, and, you know, so you can't necessarily say, hey, do I, you know, like that they have their schedule in the same way. So it kind of requires, maybe that's kind of why I never thought about it, but why I have committed to these, you know, deadlines, because the people that you're working with are relying on you to do that too, because otherwise your book doesn't get edited, and you know,
and then there's delays, and then you don't,
right?
And then you'll hear from readers and be like, "Where's my book?"
Exactly, right. And they will.
Right. It's not the money. It's just like you get to hear readers here, like, "Where's my book? I don't understand. You owe me a book."
Yes, you know, and like disappointing readers is like one of, you know, obviously the last thing that, you know, we want to. We don't want disappointed readers. We love that people are excited and passionate about our worlds, and letting them down is never something that we want to do ever.
Yeah. All right. So let's talk about Desperately Seeking a Duchess. Tell us all that elevator pitch.
All right. So, you know, so Cortland is, so of just overview of the series. So all the Duke Sins, you know, the way that I pitched it when I was presenting it to Berkeley is, I, you know, imagine if you had the Bridgertons, but they were all illegitimate. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's this very close family, and they're from a mining town. And so, you know, a lot of my books, most of my books are reflective of my experience. You know, I talked often about, my family struggled with poverty. You know, and we were, you know, when my son was born and we lost, you know, we lost our home, and we really struggled, and we relied on charities and family. And so my books are very much characters. It's, you know, I always say it's the fairy tale, but, you know, it's the fairy tale for the people who are, you know, who've struggled, who have survived, you know, abuse, or, you know, assault, or who's, you know, soldiers with PTSD, and, you know, working class characters. And so in this case, it's the Audley family, and they're miners. And so it's this merger of this family who's had no idea, no intention of ever entering polite society, who suddenly finds themselves thrust into this, you know, glittering, you know, world that is so different than what they've known. And the, you know, the idea that they don't want to necessarily be part of that world. And so with this particular book, the heroine, Kaylin, you know, this is something that we had talked about, you know, when I was talking with my editor and, you know, when it was in development, is that, you know, people say, oh, well, she could be a duchess, right? Why would she, you know, she lives in a mining town and the hero of the book is a duke. So doesn't that match automatically make sense? Isn't that something that, you know, but then you looked at, you know, the coming from her working class station that, you know, her brother was the foreman and she had greater freedoms there than she would. And that, you know, she's kind of traded some of these freedoms, more of these freedoms for this kind of gilded cage. And so she has no interest in going until the Duke comes, the hero who is Cortland. He passes, he's an identical twin. And so his brother is her father's man of affairs. And the Duke is a, like her brother, the hero's brother is just methodical and just very direct. And he's not the charmer. Like Cortland is, he's a rogue and he can, you know, get ladies to do any, you know, well, not, I guess, not like that, but you know, he could, you know, he's good with his persuasion. And so it makes sense. He's like, I'll go, she'll never know. And so he goes there and he presents this idea of a world for her. He realizes that she has this one book there and she's, and he realizes that she's interested in natural science. And he, you know, starts speaking to her of like, you can go to the museums. And so he paints this world and then, you know, and she goes there. And then she's like, this is not what I signed up for. And then she sees him and it's actually his identical twin. And he's cold and he's not at all the charmer. And she's like, what is happening here? You know, but she's able to piece together pretty quickly, even though they're identical, that this is not the same guy. Yeah. And so that, so there's a lot of, you know, it's, and he's so charming and he has a big family and they both come from these big loving families, which is, you know, the something familiar that I write about. Like for me, families and big families are something that I love, and you know, noisy, boisterous, and his sisters are troublesome, and he plays pretend, you know, swords and soldiers with his sisters, and so you know, his problem is he's in need of a fortune, and she's an heiress, and he just does not want to be a fortune hunter. He really is head over, you know, head over toes is what he says for her. And, you know, she'd had her heart broken before. So it's kind of a reversal. You know, a lot of times we see the hero and he, mm-hmm. you know, he's had his heart broken, but this guy is not, he doesn't know what to, he's never met anyone like her. And she's like, I've had my heart broken. I don't want to, you know, but they form a real friendship. And so, you know, I've seen like, you know, they talk about slow burn. And so some people say this is a slow burn, but you know, I always talk about like friendships and relationships. And, you know, for me, my husband is my best friend. We've been together since he was 15 and I was 17. Right. And so, you know, you learn that the relationships, because he's my friend, we've been able to weather being, mm-hmm. you know, poor and the hardest things of, you know, our son having multiple surgeries. And like, it's important that, you know, I always say there's passion. And that's what, you know, we love in our romance novels, but man, when life is hard and when you're in lockdown, you know, and you know, the whole world falls apart, you want your friend at your side. And that's really who the hero and the heroine of this book are, you know, friends and lovers. So, yeah.
I love this. Oh, yeah. So readers can pick up this book because it's already out. Yes.
That's the good thing, right?
That is a good thing. So yeah. Pick up this book. So, let's chat about what's your reading journey, like reading romance journey? Did you grow up reading it or late in life? What was it like?
Okay, so I grew up reading it. 13 years old, I was at my aunt's apartment in Rocky Hill, Connecticut, and I could still see it. She had a coffee table, and on their coffee table was Jude Devereaux's Eternity. And it was like a mail order bride story. And it was this gorgeous cover with like, remember how it was like the embossed, like raised flowers?
Yeah.
Like, this. And so I picked it up and I read that. I was like, that was it. Like, and so I was, you know, I was 13. And so I read it and my mind was blown. And she had such an extensive backlist of materials, you know, in romance in, you know, the early 90s. And then, you know, going back into the 80s was so, there was, they, you know, it was, she did medieval and she did, you know, Western and, you know, Regency, which is, was different. But I was like, I am only reading Jude Devereaux. And I binged everything. I remember like going to the bookstore and because I would get gift cards for like Christmas from my family, buying all the books. And I still remember the day that I was done. And I'm like, what do I do now? And like, it felt like a betrayal because, you know, at the time I'm like, I can only read one author. And then I discovered Julie Garwood.
Yeah.
Oh, like I, The Gift and The Secret. And I could just, oh, I just, you know, her Scottish romance. And I'm like, I didn't think there could be anyone better than Jude Devereaux. And then I'm like, Julie Garwood? And then, you know, and then I moved over to Judith McNaught. And then I realized, I'm like, oh, it's not just like that there's only one amazing romance author, history. It's just that they're all amazing. It's just romance is amazing. And so I never stopped reading it. And, you know, I had a love of history and it was the period. Like I've always had an interest in the, you know, the period. And so, you know, it made sense when I went to college that I was going to go for history. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I was, you know, I grew up in a very working class town and I was the first woman in my family to go to college. You know, so for me, I was going to be a teacher, right? Like that was, you know, the, you know, we'd, you know, but I wanted to write. And so I, you know, remember just even talking to my parents and they were always supportive, you know, but we were also, you know, like, you got to feed, you know, how are you going to, you know, you could survive as a teacher and you could still write because you get summers off, which we all know is the biggest fallacy of, you know, the world, right? Like, yeah. Like teachers get all this, but you don't. And so I ended up, you know, reading and writing when I was a teacher, like at, you know, when I should have been sleeping because it was the only way to do it. But So I never looked back and it was, you know, and then, you know, to be honest, I also read outside my genre. I'm a huge Jodi Picoult fan. Mm-hmm. Like mm-hmm. I like to be ripped apart when I read, like, because I torture myself like that, but she just guts me. And I like to just like, Me Before You, Jojo Moy is like,
yeah.
And people are like, you read, wait, what? Like you love Happily Ever Afters. And I like I like to craft them. And I love the idea that you could, you know, that, you know, there's going to be the guaranteed happily ever after. But I also love having this feeling of just having my heart ripped out too, because I'm perverse like that, I guess, and like to punish myself. But, you know, I think it's good to feel that emotion and, you know, cause that's life too, right? Like, you know, to have your heart just, you know,
ripped apart. But, Exactly. It is so good. So do you have any books you recommend our listeners to pick up?
Yeah. So I cannot recommend enough. So I mentioned Laquette, who's my accountability partner, and she writes contemporary and she writes for several different lines, but she, the series of hers that I'm currently reading. So she has a book that's out, One Night Expectations, and it's this family, it's the Devereaux Ranch, and there's a grandfather and he's this patriarch and, you know, kind of, and it's very much like my jam, like he's interfering, but in a good way, which is similar to the, you know, the Duke of Bentley in my series, but he's, you know, there's this misunderstanding and he's trying to bring his family together. And so, you know, this, you know, Laquette does a really good job of like, her books are so sexy And they're really emotional too. Like, she just paints such a beautiful world. And so I haven't read her One Night Expectation yet. So that's on my list. And I'm trying to think, Stacey Reed's, I'm trying to think of the title. She has it. It's out at the end of June. A Matter of Temptation.
Yeah.
That's on my Goodreads list as well. And I'm a huge Stacey Reed fan. I had the opportunity to blurb her, and that I always, you know, you get sometimes requests, and authors will, you know, will reach out, and it's like, I love, right? Like, they, you know, it's like, cause I've had to do it. It's like, I'm sorry to ask, kind of. And, you know, cause you know that people are, but Stacey Reed, I'm like, oh, please. Yes, definitely. So I had the opportunity, to read her, one of her works in advance. And so I love Stacey's work. And, you know, I'm in the middle of editing, and I have to turn in my last Berkeley book of the series, it's the third in the series, not the last, but that's due in September. So my summer is now trying to juggle, right? Because now everybody's home. So I'm like, you know, editing, which, like I said to you, I would rather write a brand new book than edit a book. Everybody's like, edit. I'm like, I know they're important. I know they're good. I know that it's essential. It's kind of like, you know, going to the dentist. Like, I, you know, I'm not a fan of the dentist, but I know that I need to do it and that it's important for me. And that's kind of like edits too. I hope my editors don't care that I said that about compared edits to the dentist. But
it is so good. It's just like, you know, there's some parts you love, there's some parts you're like, okay, yeah, I can't.
Yes.
I just have to bear.
Thank you. Thank you.
Awesome. Chrissy, tell us where you can find you online.
Okay, so you can find me at my website, which is ChristyCaldwell.com. I'm also very visible on Facebook. I'm newer to Instagram, which I'm probably dating myself. I'm on Twitter a lot as well. You can find me there. And I don't know if I've mentioned, I took up baking during the pandemic too. Ooh. And I became like a baker of cakes because it's just fun. So, you know, if you're interested in not only books, but looking at the latest cakes that I've created,
I am definitely going to be looking at that.
It's, you know, I always say it's like, you know, it takes me, you know, weeks and weeks to write a book and a cake. I'm a real slow baker, but I'm good at it, but it takes me a long time, but it still doesn't take as long as it does to write a book. So I can see the product and I have fun. So it's like creative and my kids get to eat it. So it's like everybody wins.
Gold star. You get a gold star after you finish it. You
know? Thank you.
Oh, thank you, Chrissy, for being on the show.
No, thank you so much for having me. I loved chatting with you, so I appreciate it.
If you enjoyed this podcast, feel free to share with friends, subscribe, rate, and review the show. This is the easiest way to support the podcast. For a list of books mentioned and other romance recommendations, please visit whatyourneextblog.com. Did you know you can purchase audiobooks directly from your favorite local bookstore? With LibraFM, you can pick up more than 250,000 audiobooks, including bestsellers and recommendations from real booksellers. You'll get the same audiobooks at the same price as the largest audiobook company, you know the name, but you'll be part of a different story, one that supports the local community. If you're new to audiobooks, they're the perfect way to squeeze more reading into your busy life. Listen with the free LibraFM app while you do your chores, walk the dog, relax at home. If you already love audiobooks and don't know what to listen next, check out recommendations from people who know the best booksellers. The Watch Your Next podcast has a special offer for our listeners. Get two audiobooks on LibraFM for the price of one with your first month membership. Use code WATCHYOURNEXT. The offer is valid only for new members in Canada and the U.S. The Watch Your Next podcast is part of the Frolic Podcast Network. Please visit frolic.media/podcast to discover new shows to tune in. Thank you so much for listening and have a great day.
Are you an author, publisher, or book-related business looking to reach passionate readers? What to Read Next podcast is a perfect place to connect with an engaged audience of romance and mystery lovers who are always on the hunt for their next great read. Now, we're offering sponsorship opportunities. Whether you're launching a new book, promoting an upcoming release, showcasing a bookish product or services, we can help you get the word out. Let's work together to bring your books or businesses to readers who are ready to discover something new. Please visit whatyournextblog.com/sponsorships to learn more or reach out to chat about the perfect sponsorship or package for you. Thank you much for listening. Your next great reader is waiting for you.